This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
I'm Marcy Silman. That voice, Jennifer Hopper's. A life can change in a moment. And for Jennifer Hopper, that moment was July 19th, 2009, the night a man broke into the South Park home that Hopper shared with her fiancé, Teresa Butts. He repeatedly stabbed and raped the two women. Teresa Butts died on the street in front of her home. And 2 years went by, and the media didn't name Hopper in its reports about the crime and the aftermath. Now Hopper has refashioned her life and reclaimed her career as a musician. And you just heard her singing with the Angel Band Project. She's going to be performing publicly for the first time this weekend. And I'm so glad to have you in the studio with me today.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here.
For 2 years, you had some kind of identification as surviving partner, partner usually. When did you decide it was time to reclaim yourself?
Well, I really paid attention, you know, throughout those 2 years at, you know, everything that was written and everything that, you know, was occurring. And what I noticed was the outpouring of generosity and kindness and love from my community. And of course, there were people who, excuse me, who knew it was me and were able to express that directly to me with that knowing. And then there were people, and every once in a while I'd hear something like, oh, how is she even surviving? Like, she must just be broken. And it occurred to me that that was not the case. And that it actually didn't do a service to those people to actually think that that's the case. But I did know that I was not going to, I guess, reveal myself until the trial of Isaiah Kalebu was complete. That it was really important to me that that be given, you know, as much reverence as was needed. That was important, and it made a difference to Teresa's family and my family and myself. So I knew when that was complete, I'd consider it. And after Eli Sanders wrote the article that he wrote.
In The Stranger.
Yeah, in The Stranger. I knew that, well, I just knew that I wanted to reveal myself. I wanted it to be in my own words with help, and that The Stranger had given such honor and honesty to such a hard conversation for so many years over and over and over again, that that would be the venue if they'd have me. And I had a conversation with Eli, and he embraced the idea and offered to really, I'm not a writer. I can write, but, you know, there's an actual skill and craft to it. And it was like a masterclass working with both Eli and some of his colleagues to craft something that would really tell people what I intended to tell them, have them get that I was okay and making it through, and the realities of what had happened, and then also to answer some of the questions, you know, that he was also privy to.
And Eli, you can read all of these articles in The Stranger. They're all up and easily accessible. I'm speaking with Jennifer Hopper, and one of the statistics that I read in one of those articles was the shocking number that one in three of us may at some time have or possibly will experience a violent sexual assault. And it occurred to me that we hear those numbers, but we don't often put faces on them. And then it occurred to me to wonder how you begin the process of reclaiming yourself, putting life back together. How do you start? How did you start?
Well, first of all, there wasn't a moment in which I was not surrounded by love. So I would say the first step is to allow those that love you to actually support you. Like, don't push them away. Secondly, I was provided a counselor who is the best of the best. And, you know, Harborview has some of the best of the best that immediately, I think a week later, I saw her for the first time, not even a week. And we started that process together. And so I really trusted her from the moment I met her. And I'll say her name because she's extraordinary. Her name's Lucy Berliner. And she, the thing that she did in the first step to, I would say, starting that climb to the other side was in her just acknowledging, yeah, this was big and you will never be the same.
Not everybody has access to counseling. And a lot of people, it occurred to me in reading your first person article in The Stranger that you took the witness stand. You helped convict Kalebu, mm-hmm. Your words and the words of the detectives who worked with you. A lot of people are afraid to even acknowledge that a rape has happened. Mm-hmm. So what is it, just the love that gave you that strength?
I don't know. I wish I could give you this tangible answer to that. What I would say is that in this occurrence, more than a rape happened, right? There was a murder and there was an attempted murder. And I never had a moment in which I thought I wouldn't testify. Like that just, it never occurred to me as an option. And even if it had occurred to me as an option, I can't imagine having wanted to take that option. To me, it was something occurred in that room. I was witness to it. I actually gave up going to Teresa's body in her last moments because I didn't know how long I had. Mm-hmm. So that someone could know what would happen there. So maybe it's in that moment it became an intention and nothing would have stopped that intention from that moment that, you know, there would be whatever kind of justice there could be for what had happened.
You told recently Seattle Times columnist Nicole Broder about forgiveness, the forgiveness mm-hmm. that you had both for Teresa for dying on you, which is a little bit odd, but also for Kalebu, for what he did. Mm-hmm. And I wonder where that well of forgiveness originates.
Mm-hmm. It's very distinct for me. And I don't know. Someone asked me, did I get that in therapy? And I think Lucy created the space for that mm-hmm. to occur, but I don't remember having any real conversations about it. A few months after, there were some initial hearings, and there was a picture either in the paper or on TV. I can't remember. I just remember the image of Kalebu's mother leaning against the partition in the courtroom that was kind of clear. And I was struck for the first time by his humanity. Now, I will say in the moment, I looked for it. Like in the moment of the attack, I for sure looked for it. And saw glimpses of it. But once it got violent, I mean, the person turns into something other because you can't imagine another human right. behaving that way. But in that moment, I was struck by his humanity again in that suddenly he was someone's child. And I had this image, and I don't know where it came from or why, but of his mother holding him as a little baby and, you know, looking at him like any mother would look at their child, like with all the hope in the world, who are you going to be? All the wonder. And in that moment, it's like I could sort of see something. I could see that something happened along the way. And especially with someone like him who suffers from, you know, a form of mental illness, the clarity of that, I'm not sure. Something happened and he lacks the ability to have that. Like, he knows he's doing wrong and he doesn't care, and there's just something not right. And so while he deserves to be in prison for his actions, that was like the moment in which the kind of that anger or rage the question why is the thing that I think creates the anger and the rage. But that started to drip away, and I started having more conversations like, well, I wonder what happened to him, and why do people do this? I became way more interested in the question of the humanity of violence and less rageful towards him. And in that space, it built and built and built. And I knew for sure that, you know, I really was in that place of forgiveness when I heard that he had lost his appeal. And when my first thought was of complete relief for me and my family and Teresa's family. But my second thought was in some way a relief for him that maybe the knowing of this is what so and this is where I'm going to be and this is my life for someone with some mental illness could actually be comforting and provide him with some solace and peace. And when I had that thought, I was like, oh, this is very real. It's not something I'm making up to make myself feel better. It's very real. And I even felt a whole new level of, you know, peace and serenity in my life. And I'm so grateful. And I don't know where it came from, but it just... It exists.
Some of that funnels into music. You mm-hmm. are a musician. You're performing Friday night, part of the reason you're here,
yes.
with the Angel Band Project. And I want to hear a little bit of that music right now so
okay.
people know what's in store for them. And that's the instrumental. We're going to hear your voice in just a second. I'm curious, this band is not your idea. This band was formed by who?
Well, Teresa grew up with two wonderful women, Jean Purcell and Rachel Ebling. She met them in kindergarten and knew them all along, and I had met them both before she had passed away. And the funeral in St. Louis, you know, she comes from a huge family. They're all very talented. She has a brother who's a two-time Tony Award winner. The music just filled up the space. And then a couple months later at her memorial here in Seattle, I sang, friends sang. I think I had a gospel choir come. I mean, it was just, I knew that I wanted it to be a joyous and respectful space for us to wish Teresa off. And Jean had a dream in which Teresa was in the middle of a group of her friends and family, and they were encircling her singing this old hymn called Angel Band. And she woke up and I guess called Rachel first, and they talked about it. And then they called me and said, we want to do a benefit CD, and we want you to be in it and Norbert to be in it and some of other of Teresa's family. And we're going to sell it, and we're going to make money for people who have survived, you know, sexual violence. And that's what we're going to do. And I was like, okay. And less than a year later, it was complete. And which is a miracle in and of itself.
Well, you're going to perform for the first time in Seattle with the Angel Band in a big public venue at Seattle's Neptune Theater on Friday. And the proceeds from the show do go to, as I understand, music therapy program.
Right.
So you need to get those tickets now because
yes,
they're
please.
Going fast. And you'll see Jennifer there. And we're going to leave you with some music from that. And this is actually not you singing. This is Norbert Leo Butz,
yes.
Teresa's brother, singing. Thank you so very much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
This is The Record with Ross Reynolds. I'm Marcy Silman.
When you try your best, but you don't succeed. When you get what you want, but not what you need. When you feel so tired, you can't sleep. Could it be worse? And the tears come streaming down your face.